space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
No idea what's happening right now. I'm trying something. I'm in my car. This says we're live. I didn't know that I could do this. So, right now, if you're watching, you are pinned between my rearview mirror and my ceiling on my car. And hopefully you don't fall down. And wow, there's the chat pops up on the screen. How cool is that? Now, before I get the policy makers on my butt, I'm going to be extremely careful driving and recording stuff. I'm just going to basically take everyone with me on my way to work. So, this is cool. I didn't know this was going to work. Yeah. Somebody said, what's up with that Quasi guy? That would be Quasi Luminous. And I guess he's started another channel, or a few other channels actually, which I don't really want to plug, so. But he basically lost all of his steam once him and Devin Magby broke up. Which I already knew was going to happen, you know. But anyhow, yes. Check this out. Oh, this weekend, if weather permits, about an hour away from where I live, I hope this does not fall down. There's a chance this might fall down, because my car is like a little tank. Anyhow, this weekend, God, I hope it doesn't fall. I may be, I'm going to be going to this place out east where there is a Titan skull. I found a Titan skull. Like, I found the jawbone and teeth of a Titan. And, I wish I had one of those drones so that I can, like, go up and show you from above, because it's that big. I mean, it's so gigantic. It's so titanic. I wish I could show you all. But I'm going to go there. I'm going to try to get the best images of it as possible. And if I have reception, I'll do a live stream from there. That's why I'm doing this right now. To sort of test it out and see if it works. No idea if this is even working right now. I hope it is. That'd be cool. But yeah, I'm going to go out. There's this place called the Painted Mines. If you want, you can Google it. It's the Painted Mines here in Colorado. There's actually an interesting mud fossil. It looks like a little sphinx type deal. So I'll be showing that to everyone as well. But the main reason why I'm going is because of this. It looks like it's a jawbone. Like, you see how my teeth are down there? Like that. That's exactly what this is going to look like. And the teeth are like that big. It's going to blow your mind. It blows my mind. And last time I was there, you know, I saw it as I was leaving, and it started to rain and stuff, and I want to try to find a good angle to show everybody. Maybe sometime this year, you know, I'll be able to get, like, one of those drones or something. I think that would be great. I think those drones are perfect for seeing these giant titanic mud fossils from above, so that we can get a better perspective on them, you know, and see them from, like, various angles and stuff. So, anyhow, oh, and I also wanted to talk about, this is so interesting, it's so weird doing a live stream from my car right now. I wonder who's watching. I always feel like somebody's watching. Anyhow, and I also want to thank everybody for all of your little tips. Okay, lots of people are giving me tips, you know, like, hey, by the way, JPMers, I like your stuff, but, you know, try to get to the point. I'm sorry. When I do live streams, it's a little harder to get to the point, because that's just kind of how I talk. But I was thinking about this, right? I'm thinking about the whole mud fossils thing. I'm talking about the Titans walking our realm. Like, I imagine them walking our realm right now. And, you know, their heads would poke up above the clouds. And I imagine, like, what would it be like back then? You know, questions like, you know, supposedly in those paradise-type times when the Titans did walk our realm and there were elves and there were giant trees shooting up out of the ground, or what I call silica pillars today. Where's the camera? Where is it? There it is. Were there storms, you know? Did they have hurricanes? Did they have lightning storms, you know? Because obviously you wouldn't want to be around lightning if you're a gigantic being whose head pops up above the clouds, you know? I wouldn't want to be. So maybe there were, maybe there wasn't. And this would all be pre-flood. Hey, someone just donated $2. How cool. Thank you. Man, that always blows my mind. Thank you. You know, but your head would pop up above the clouds. You don't want to be around lightning. Which makes me think about the Matrix, you know, when they talk about it was us who scorched the sky or something along those lines. But another thing is that, you know, a lot of people think about the Titans or the Giants drowning in the floodwaters, right? And so in my mind, I'm not sure how it was for you guys, but I just imagine a lot of rain building up, and it, you know, slowly goes up above their heads, and they're like, oh, we can't swim, or whatever. Yeah, you know, I don't know if or not, because supposedly there wasn't a lot of water in our realm back then. But if you think about this, not only were there the oceans introduced all at once, all of these waters, not only was our realm terraformed, and all of that debris was dredged up and mixed with all of this ocean water and turned into mud, you've got that mud just piling itself, you know, going God knows how many miles per hour, knocking things down in its path, completely covering over everything. I mean, if you guys have seen the footage from the tsunami that hit Japan a few years back, or even that one tsunami, I think it was in 2010, right? The thing that was so dangerous wasn't just the water, but the water mixed with all of the debris, knocking everything over. I mean, even if you could swim, it would make it impossible for you to move about. Things would be pushing you down underneath the water. And, I mean, even for a being that, a titan, that would be, you know, up to 2 miles tall, with the introduction of our oceans, and that much debris, and that much mud, and all that garbage swirling around and pushing everything aside, they would drown. You know, they wouldn't have room to maneuver. They would just mix with everything. And on top of that, if you go by the biblical records and some of the other documents, not only do they say that the oceans were introduced, the oceans as we know them today, the depth at which they are today, but they say and indicate that the ocean waters rose up to match some of our highest mountaintops. Pardon me. Now, obviously, one of my viewers out there made a good point in a comment saying, you know, not everything would have died, because if everything died, how do all these stories survive? Which is, you know, exactly what is told to Jack Sparrow in Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, obviously there were beings that survived this cataclysm. And it seems logical to me that if you are one of these beings and you realize what's happening, that going to the top of the highest mountain peaks at and around this time would be the safest thing to do. Now, it's very interesting because the Aryan race, right, this very white-skinned, I imagine them as being almost albino-like, but the founders of, you know, the Indian culture over in India, and so much of the Middle East as well, even the country Iran is named after the Aryans. Iran. But they came down from the Caucasus Mountains, right? In all of these legends, they talk about the gods descending down from the mountains. Well, why are the gods coming down from mountains, you know? Why would the gods care about the mountains? I only stopped at this stop sign right here out of pure, like, because I'm doing a video. Normally, I do not stop at that stop sign as long as it's safe. Just so you know. It's totally unnecessary to stop at that particular one. Anyhow, back to my point. Why are the gods coming down and descending from mountains? Mount Olympus, Mount Hermon, Mount Armon, the Caucasus Mountains, which are supposedly what the Caucasian people are, you know, named for. They're coming down from the mountains because they knew the world was being flooded up that high. What else are you going to do? You're going to run to the top of the tallest mountains. So, clearly, many beings did survive. Well, I shouldn't say many. Some beings survived. And it's also very possible that some titans survived as well by running to the top of the tallest mountains. Now, I believe that this is reflected as far as the Titans drowning, the Titans being mud-washed by this flood and turned into stone. I believe this is reflected in our folklore and in, like, movies, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples. There are some movies in which the bad guys, or the Titans, or the elves, or the gods, and whatnot, they don't like water. Just plain old water. You know, what a strange thing to write into your movie script for these titanic beings to be afraid of water. I'm thinking specifically right now of the movie BFG. I'm not sure how many people have seen that, but you have these Titans in this movie. Indestructible, just gigantic beings. And it starts to rain a little bit, and they just freak out. They turn into little girls. They're terrified of water. Well, what would make the director put that into the movie, to have these gigantic beings afraid of water, you know? I mean, they could have been afraid of mice, or, you know, anything else. But they were afraid of water. Also, if you think about the movie Signs, in the movie Signs, with Mel Gibson, you know, who seems to be in some esoteric movies as well, the alien, or the alien, right, the strangers from some other place, the aliens were defeated by just pouring water on them. You know, it made their skin kind of burn, and they sort of had this otherworldly looking skin. It looks like it could have been made from silica. And the alien starts to burn in the movie Signs because water is poured on it. Also, likewise, there's the witch, the Wicked Witch of the West. She starts to burn. You pour water on her and she dies as well. What's the point of that? You know, who thought of this? Why is water something that would destroy the bad guys, or, you know, why would it be something that they're afraid of? I mean, think about the vampires and holy water. Water from the gods, or water from God, right? The gods introduced this water in order to destroy evil. That's holy water. I think that's where that comes from. And so you've got the vampires, you know, their skin burns away, and they don't like water touching them. The Wicked Witch, not only that, but the Wicked Witch is this green color, you know, associated with the elven race. I think she may even have, like, the, you know, the classic pointy ears. I can't remember. But she's this green color. She has this nose, you know, pointy nose and stuff. There's just certain attributes, little nuggets and breadcrumbs of truth. So, I'm probably a couple minutes away from being at work right now, and I'm interested in seeing how this turned out, this little impromptu session. I'm sorry I can't really read the chat, but, you know, I would like to survive the day. So just to wrap things up, thank you to whoever donated the $2. It highlighted it, so that's why I saw that. This weekend I'm going to be going out and showing you, if this works, I'll try doing a live stream. I'm going to go out and show you some actual, a mud fossil of what I believe is maybe a Titan's jaw and teeth, which should be pretty exciting. I believe the gods came down from the mountaintops because the world was indeed flooded by the quote-unquote gods, who unleashed it as the ultimate weapon to destroy the Titans once and for all, which in turn destroyed the rest of our world, which in turn fossilized everything and turned it into stone. And that's the reason why, you know, there's all of this little nuggets, little breadcrumbs that indicate that the bad guys or the giants or the Titans or the trolls or whatever, they don't like water. You know, what a really stupid thing for something so intimidating to be afraid of is the water. Well, it's symbolic. It harkens back to the time when the water was introduced. Our world was altogether different. You know, that the bad guys are always the ones who don't like the water, you know? Because the good guys, the gods, introduced the waters in order to flush out all of the crap that was here, that they had decided after having a council together, you know, let us go down there and flood their world, basically. Alright, so I'm pulling up on work here. I'm glad I actually thought of some things to talk about on the drive. Maybe I'll do this more often. It will mean that I won't have a rearview mirror, because my rearview mirror is, like, fastening my phone to the roof of my car right now, so it's pointing downwards. Anyway, I had a great time. I had fun. I'm pulling up right now, and then I shall stop. So, I don't know what else to say. This was just a test. This is not something I had planned. I literally just thought of this at the last second. Hey, let's see if I can find a parking spot.
In Iraq, southeast of Baghdad, lies Kujut Rabu. Over 2,000 years ago, it was the site of the capital city of the Parthian civilization. In 1938, Austrian archaeologist Wilhelm Koenig unearthed something there. He found a 15 centimeters tall clay pot containing a sheet of copper wrapped into a cylinder shape, encasing an iron rod. The metal objects inside were corroded. Scientific tests showed the corrosion was caused by an acidic agent, like vinegar or wine. To Wilhelm Koenig, this all seemed very familiar. It closely resembles a very modern piece of technology, a battery. Koenig dated his pot to around 200 BC, firmly in the era of the Parthian Empire. But the Parthians were warriors, known for their prowess in battle, not for their scientific achievements. After Koenig announced his discovery, about a dozen more were identified. Metallurgy expert Dr. Paul Craddock says, "They are a one-off. As far as we know, nobody else has found anything like these. They are odd things. They are one of life's enigmas." Koenig's theory that the pot is an ancient battery is supported by several experiments. Dr. Marjorie Seneschal led a team that built several replicas of the so-called Baghdad battery, using lemon juice and vinegar as the acidic agent. Their jar produced 0.8 to 2 volts. If enough jars were connected in a series, they could generate a much higher voltage. She summarized her experiment by saying, "I don't think anyone can say for sure what they were used for, but they may have been batteries because they do work." However, archaeologists have found no wires with the pots that would enable the construction of a battery. The power they might have created was insufficient for any practical use, except one. Wilhelm Koenig believed they were used for electroplating. This is commonly used today to transfer a thin layer of metal onto another metal surface. Just like we do in the 21st century, Koenig argued the Parthians used these pots to gild silver or gold onto jewelry. The process of electroplating was developed by several people independently after the invention of the galvanic cell at the end of the 18th century. The galvanic cell is an electrochemical device that derives electrical energy from reactions occurring within it. It works by having a solid metal or electrode submerged in an acidic solution or electrolyte. Several cells combine to make up a battery. 2 millennia ago, there were two main techniques to plate jewelry. Jewelers would either hammer precious metal into thin strips or mix it with mercury and paste it onto an object. In 1978, Dr. Arne Egebrecht tested Koenig's hypothesis. Egebrecht connected many replica jars together using grape juice as an electrolyte. Egebrecht claimed his batteries successfully deposited a thin layer of silver onto another surface. Though the layer was only 1/10,000th of a millimeter thick, it vindicated Koenig's hypothesis. However, Egebrecht and his team took no photographic evidence of his experiments, and his results have never been reproduced in subsequent attempts by other scientists. Unfortunately for Koenig, many historians, archaeologists, and scientists doubt his findings. Even the nature of his discovery is questionable. There are conflicting stories about how he found the jar. Either he excavated it at Kudret Rabu, or he found it in the basement of the Baghdad Museum, where it went on display. But according to Dr. St. John Simpson, Koenig was wrong about its provenance. Simpson says, the pot itself is Sasanian. This discrepancy presumably lies either in a misidentification of the age of the ceramic vessel or the site at which it was found. The pot may therefore be 900 years younger than Koenig claimed, which begs the question, was he also wrong about the electroplating? Dr. Paul Craddock says all examples of gilded jewelry from the ancient era were plated conventionally or with mercury. There's never been any untouchable evidence to support the electroplating theory, he says. But Craddock still thinks the pot is a battery, just used for a different purpose. He suggests a cluster of batteries placed inside a metal statue or idol would have given worshippers a tiny but noticeable shock, like a warm tingle. He says the ancients might have used such tricks in the temple to demonstrate the power of a priest and religion. This is similar to Hero's engine from ancient Egypt, a steam-driven machine that historians are convinced worked, but don't know what it was used for. The components of the Baghdad battery are impossible to date. If it is Parthian, then it is contemporaneous with the rise of the Roman Empire. But this itself is a problem. The Romans recorded their encounters with and knowledge of other civilizations. We would especially expect detailed accounts of Parthia, which was Rome's major enemy in the east. Yet there is no historical record anywhere of Parthians having advanced technology like the Baghdad battery. There is another, more mundane, but perhaps more plausible theory. The ancient city of Seleucia, in the same area southeast of Baghdad, used similar objects for storing sacred papyri. Scrolls were put inside the metal sheath for protection, never to be read by human eyes. This might explain the bitumen seal on the pot. It was complete, and therefore there was no way of extracting electricity generated by a battery. Containment was important to whomever created it. The dozen or so similar batteries supposedly found in the wake of Koenig's discovery have been lost. Tragically, his battery artifacts were looted from the Museum of Baghdad during the Second Gulf War in 2003. Even if we do find the Baghdad battery again, advanced dating techniques won't work on the corroded metal or the clay pot. The different stories of its discovery obfuscate the pot's purpose, and experimental archaeology has proven nothing. It has merely suggested the theory that ancient Parthians could generate electricity might be true. Ultimately, the sands of time hide their secrets well.
Battery and the first arc lights were used at that time. But was electrical generation limited to these in ancient Egypt? A careful examination of Egyptian history immediately reveals the sophistication in perfect illumination. No soot has been found in the corridors of the pyramids or the tombs of the kings, because these areas were lit using electricity. Relief carvings show that the Egyptians used handheld torches powered by cable-free power sources. The arc lamp used in the lighthouse of Alexandria is further proof that electricity was used in ancient Egypt. The energy required to power the lighthouse of Alexandria for 24 hours a day could only have been supplied by a regular electrical source. The pyramids of Egypt were giant power plants generating electricity. 1. The outer casing of the Great Pyramid was covered with white tufa limestone, so tightly built that not even a razor blade could fit between the blocks. The white tufa limestone does not contain magnesium and has high insulating properties. This insulation property prevented the electricity inside the pyramid from being released without control. 2. The stone blocks used inside the pyramid were made of another form of limestone, containing crystal and a small amount of metal, which allowed for maximum power transmission. The shafts inside the pyramid were lined with granite. Granite is a conductor, is a slightly radioactive substance, and permits the ionization of the air inside these shafts. When we look at an insulated electric cable, we see that conductive and insulation materials are used in the same way as in the pyramids. 3. The conductive and insulating properties of the pyramid are an example of flawless engineering. However, a source of energy is needed for electricity generation. The Giza Plateau where the pyramids stand is full of underground water channels. The pyramids rise above the limestone layers, the spaces between them being full of water. These special layers of rock that transmit electricity upward as they carry underground water to the surface are known as aquifers. The high volume flow of the River Nile that passes through these aquifers produces an electric current. This is known as physioelectricity. The pyramids' underground chambers are granite conductors built within the rock charged with physioelectricity. This electric current is conducted directly to the upper part of the pyramid's granite, covered subterranean chambers. Granite is a very good conductor of electricity. The electromagnetic field that forms at the bottom of the pyramid is transmitted in concentrated form to the upper layers of the pyramid. On the top of the pyramid, there was a gold capstone, gold being an excellent conductor of electricity. This section is no longer there in our day. This means the top of the pyramid has lost its structure of flawless geometry. This gold capstone facilitated a conductive path for the transfer of negative ions to the ionosphere. This way, a current was generated. How does it serve to move the electromagnetic field on the ground through the help of an aquifer? An identical form of this technology, employed in Egypt 5,000 years ago, was used by Nikola Tesla, an inventor of electric technology in the early 1900s, in a tower he constructed in the United States of America. Tesla, the inventor of such fundamental electric technology as the alternating current, electric engine, radio, the laser, and radar, was successful in simultaneously transmitting sound and pictures between continents in the Wardenclyffe Tower he built between 1901 and 1917. He used an external source of electricity for this, and even applied wireless power transmission technology. Tesla had also built his tower above an aquifer and discharged the negative ions from the aquifer to the tower. The electromagnetic technology used in Tesla's famous tower is identical to the electromagnetic field set up in the construction of the pyramids. Both systems generate negative ions and transmit them without the need for electric cables. So for what purpose did the Egyptians use electricity? Relief carvings clearly show that the Egyptians used handheld bulb-type lamps powered by a cable-free electric source. These bulbs are reminiscent of Nikola Tesla's descriptions to show that his alternating current was safe. At the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, Tesla transmitted alternating electric current through his body to light a bulb he held in his hand without using electric cables. This relief carving shows a wireless antenna. The Egyptians used the antenna and cable-free energy for wireless communication. And the relief on the left is a carved transmitter with a receiver on the left. This evidence indicates that the Egyptians used free wireless energy for communication purposes. This relief carving shows a yarn manufacturing facility. The yarn Egyptians used for their fabrics at that time were as fine as those manufactured by machinery today. The Egyptians also used electric power in their weaving plants. It was seen that many gold objects which have remained from ancient Egypt were in fact very finely gold-plated. Such perfect gold-plating, as in these pieces, requires the use of electricity. The total electromagnetic measurement made around the Great Pyramid is identical to that made during a thunderstorm with lightning. There's a powerful electromagnetic field around the Great Pyramid. This may be observed through a simple experiment. When standing at the top of the pyramid with a bottle wrapped in a damp cloth, sparks fly away from the bottle, as if one were on top of a high-voltage bobbin. The pyramids were not used as tombs. The pyramids have always been interpreted as the tombs of the pharaohs, but in fact, no inscriptions of any kind appear in the corridors of the Great Pyramid. This suggests a functional building rather than a mausoleum. An empty stone chest was found on the central axis of the pyramid that archaeologists call the King's Chamber. They claimed that this contained the coffin of the pharaoh, but that since this had been stolen, it was now empty. But the examination of the dimensions of the stone chest and the special location in which it was installed reveals a different state of affairs. That point is just where the missing part of the pyramid's conductive structure and whole design suggests it should be. If a superconductive material was installed here, the pyramid could manufacture enough electricity for all of Egypt. This superconductor is thought to have been the Ark of the Covenant, which was known to have been in Egypt in ancient times, and whose dimensions are just right to fit inside the stone chest. The Prophet Moses, peace be upon him, was adopted by Pharaoh, and according to historic records, was raised as an administrator because of his superior moral values, intelligence, and abilities. One of the phases in leadership training in ancient Egypt was the teaching of all the secrets of Egypt and the knowledge of energy. In addition to its other properties, there are also various references to the Ark of the Covenant serving as a capacitor, and that this was the source of Egypt's energy. The Prophet Moses, peace be upon him, is known to have taken the Ark of the Covenant with him when he fled Egypt. According to historic references, one of the reasons why Pharaoh chased the Prophet Moses, peace be upon him, right up to the last moment and strove to catch him at whatever price was the Ark of the Covenant, because Pharaoh was aware that all the glory and magnificence of Egypt would be lost without electricity. Historic references also show that Egyptian civilization reached its peak during the reign of Ramses II, who lived at the same time as the Prophet Moses, peace be upon him. But those civilizations collapsed in less than 10 years, after Ramses II, and Giza was even abandoned. The city, once the center of civilization, remained deserted until the next dynasty settled there. Were the Egyptians the only society to utilize wireless electrical technology? The relief carvings left by the Mayan and Assyrians also contain images of similar techniques to those implied in the pyramids. All this information once again goes to demonstrate that there were no primitive people and societies in the past, as evolutionists would have us believe. In terms of civilization, more or less developed communities have lived side by side at all times throughout history. A society that existed thousands of years ago enjoyed a far more advanced technology compared to one living in the 20th century. And this shows us that development is not part of an evolutionary process. In other words, that there is no linear advancement from a primitive level of civilization to a more developed one in history.
Hello everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. I'm going to try to play one more. If you get a chance to jump over there, if you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, and if you scroll down, you'll find a link for People for People Radio Network, where you can actually go over there and join in their chat room. Wonderful people over there as well. So there's plenty of people to talk to around here. So I'm going to play one more. This is pretty long. I haven't screened this one yet, so I'm just going to go ahead and give it a shot. Stay tuned.
Greetings, friends of the universe. Today I'm going to share with you Nikola Tesla's most extraordinary interview, him for 116 years. In this interview, Mr. Tesla shares his view on the universe, the energy all around us, and the spiritual power of humans. Let's start. Nikola Tesla is considered one of the most innovative and mysterious men who ever lived on Earth. He was a man way ahead of his time and is responsible for most of the technology we use today. In fact, if Tesla hadn't invented and researched everything he did in his time, our technology today would be considerably worse. Tesla's inventions went far beyond electricity. He made all kinds of groundbreaking discoveries. Here is one very rare interview, hidden for nearly 116 years. Futurists say that the 20th and 21st century was born ahead of Nikola Tesla. They celebrate conversely magnetic field and sing hymns to induction's engine. Their creator was called the hunter, who caught the light in his net from the depths of the earth, and the warrior, who captured fire from heaven. Father of alternating current will make the physics and chemistry dominate half the world. Industry will proclaim him as their supreme saint, a banker for the largest benefactors. In the laboratory of Nikola Tesla, for the first time, is broken atom. There is created a weapon that causes the earthquake vibrations. There are discovered black cosmic rays. Five races will pray to him in the temple of the future because they had taught a great secret that impedicles of elements can be watered with the life forces from the ethers.
Yes, these are some of my most important discoveries. I'm a defeated man. I have not accomplished the greatest thing I could.
What is it, Mr. Tesla?
I wanted to illuminate the whole Earth. There is enough electricity to become a second sun. Light would appear around the equator as a ring around Saturn. Mankind is not ready for the great and good. In Colorado Springs, I soaked the Earth by electricity. Also, we can water the other energies, such as positive mental energy. They are in the music of Bach, or Mozart, or in the verses of great poets. In the Earth's interior, there are energy of joy, peace, and love. Their expressions are a flower that grows from the Earth, the food we get out of her, and everything that makes man's homeland. I've spent years looking for the way that this energy could influence people. The beauty and the scent of roses can be used as a medicine, and the sun rays as a food. Life has an infinite number of forms, and the duty of scientists is to find them in every form of matter. Three things are essential in this. All that I do is a search for them. I know I will not find them, but I will not give up on them.
What are these things, Mr. Tesla?
One issue is food. What is stellar or terrestrial energy to feed the hungry on Earth? With what wine watered all thirsty so that they can cheer in their heart and understand that they are gods? Another thing is to destroy the power of evil and suffering in which man's life passes. They sometimes occur as an epidemic in the depths of space. In this century, the disease had spread from Earth in the universe. The third thing is there an excess light in the universe? I discovered a star that by all the astronomical and mathematical laws could disappear and that nothing seems to be modified. This star is in this galaxy. Its light can occur in such density that fits into a sphere smaller than an apple or heavier than our solar system. Religions and philosophies teach that man can become the Christ, Buddha, and Zoroaster. What I'm trying to prove is wilder.
All right, so basically, I didn't screen that one there. I'll have to listen to that later or something. But it's like 34 minutes long. Anyway, if you look back through history and you see a lot of different things and you hear all these stories about, you know, like the Titans and you know, all the myths and fairy tales of the world, it kind of shows you a different story about what possibly could have happened throughout history. But either way, it could very well be that ancient civilizations may actually had electrical systems. If you go out and look at your modern day radio towers out here, you notice that every single one of them have ground wires to them. You know, basically guide wires that they're tapped into the ground to keep these things from swaying and falling over and such. But that's not their only purpose. Because there's actually a mathematical equation. I'll have to Google that up. Equation for voltage in the air or whatever. Let me see if I can find that. So I can throw a link in there. For voltage. This is terrible for live radio. How to calculate breakdown voltage. No, I don't think that's the one. Anyway, for every so many feet you get up off the ground, there's supposedly like 100 volts per. There's a group out there called the Atmospheric Group, and they have four 200 foot towers, poles up there that have nano coated wires where they're actually pulling electricity right out of the ground. Right out of the air. I didn't even find the right one, so I'm gonna. Somebody in the chat room hearing that, see if you can't help me find that. There's an equation that'll tell you how many volts per meters or whatever is up in the atmosphere there. Doggone it. Let me see if I can... atmospheric energy. Let me see if that one would do it. Normally I got some help here. Energy... So anyway, I ain't finding it yet. Dead burnt. Well, there's sort of a deal. Atmospheric electricity. Man, alright. Never mind. I'll just try to look it up. Later. But if you actually look at all these radio towers and stuff like that, they're setting up there pretty doggone high, at least a couple hundred feet. And Stephen said Einstein was only 20 years old during this interview. His theory of relativity didn't begin development until 1907. Tesla didn't begin criticizing the theory until later in his life. Also, Tesla didn't meet and care for his beloved pigeon until far later in years. Yeah, I don't know. I just somebody passed the interview over to me, so I wanted to take a look at it. But either way, let's see if we can get back on track here. Where was I going? I was trying to find the equation. Maybe you can help me, Stephen. There's a equation for how many volts per feet you get up off the ground. It's like 100 volts per so many feet. Anyway, basically pulling electricity right out of the air. And what I'm thinking about electricity and what the school book actually says about electricity is starting to look like something completely different. You know, having to do with the way that magnetic fields travel and such, and the effect that when you're pulsing a magnet, when you're spinning a magnet past a coil of wire and you're inducing a current, the standard model is that you're inducing electron flow in the copper wires and stuff like that. Well, and when you get into static electricity, it's that basically you're building up a higher charge on any given material than the other, like, you know, rubbing a piece of cloth across a piece of PVC pipe or plastic like that. You actually build up a static charge. And so there's all different types of ways to actually produce electricity, whether it be negative ion generation or static electricity or thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics. There's so many different ways to actually get the same result, different voltage range. And when you're actually getting to talking about current, I think Stephen just found it. Let me look here. He said potential, aka voltage, increases with altitude about 30 volts per foot, 100 VM, 30 volts per foot, 100 volts per meter. Okay, cool. Thanks for that, Stephen. I appreciate that. But when I sat back and I was listening to some of these different videos, especially the one about the Egyptian pyramids, and I'm visualizing as they're talking about this, and they're talking about how there used to be a golden capstone on the top of this particular, you know, these pyramids and stuff. And it in my mind visualizes like an antenna system, like Nikola Tesla's Wardenclyffe Tower, to be able to transfer energy, you know, with the way that electricity runs across the spark gap, and it'll cause a pulse, or you know, even the vibration of a particular material because it has an electric charge or whatever can make a a fluctuation in the magnetic fields that basically will induce a current in anything else that's conductive in the general vicinity, or even farther out. It's depending on how far you can actually send wireless energy, which Tesla believed you could actually send wireless energy all the way around the Earth. And so, you know, with that said, that they could have had electricity, you know, way, way, way back in history, and we wouldn't even know it. The reason why I threw that mud fossils thing in there is because while I'm out here researching into mad science and all that kind of stuff, and history and myths and legends or whatever, you know, even fairy tales, things like, giants existing in the day or whatever, and the great flood that wiped them all out, I'm looking not just at the, possibility that any of this could even be real or whatever, but what kind of technologies they actually had in those days. And some of the ones where you see these big, tall church steeples, one would have thought, you know, for some reason you wouldn't want that big old tall metal, steeple on this church, because it would actually be, a lightning rod, essentially, unless you wanted to try to, capture this energy. And so, you know, if your intentions were to be able to capture some of this electricity, Stephen also posted a link in the chat room, the Electric Universe Theory. And the first part of it just says atmospheric electricity is the regular variation of the Earth's atmospheric electromagnetic network. That's just the first deal on there. But anyway, the link's posted in the chat room. I'll repost it in the other chat rooms if you want to read the article. But basically, with everything that the Earth is doing right now, the Earth is like a thermal electric generator of massive proportions. It's got static electric potential, and it's just so much. We're floating in a sea of energy. And that's one of the things that drives me insane, that people always say, oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Well, tell that to a lightning bolt, man. You get struck by a lightning bolt, there's some serious voltage going on there. And some serious power as far as that goes, because even with high voltage, the higher you get in that energy, that voltage, you start to build amperage too, and current. So, you know, lightning can kill you. It's not, you know, nothing to play around with. But either way, back in them days, if they knew about different types of gases being able to be energized into plasma, they could have actually built the equivalents of a fluorescent bulb thousands of years ago, you know, how they would have vacuumed it down or whatever, that's a good question. Everything's mysterious as far as I'm concerned. There's just when you think you've got everything in this world figured out, there's something else that comes along that kind of, you know, asks a whole different question, such as there's videos out there where people were digging out coal or shoveling coal into a furnace and a piece of coal fell out and broke and there was a bell inside of it, or finding a rock or a hammer inside of a rock that should have been not possible because of the way that history was told. So, you know, it's pretty exciting. You find all these kind of things, and trying to put all these pieces together and try to figure out a way by which modern day society could actually benefit from technologies that, you know, probably are just being rediscovered as far as I'm concerned. It's amazing how much power is in, you know, a lightning storm itself. It's there's so much energy being produced and just basically going out there. And of course, nature's got a purpose for it. You know, it produces ozone, which is supposedly one of the protective fields that goes around our Earth. And, you know, the magnetic field itself is supposed to block radiation from the sun. That's what modern science talks about. But, you know, trying to bring this back up to modern day time, the way that we use electricity and how we actually have to pay for it and such, there are certain things that people just wouldn't want you to know, period. You know, if I'm selling cold medicine, I don't want you to come out and tell everybody there's a free cold medicine that is, you know, growing in your backyard, because that's bad for business. And if I'm selling you crude oil for making plastics and diesel fuel and gasoline and kerosene and all the different byproducts of you know, the crude oil industry, what they classify as fossil fuels, which I highly disagree with. It's not fossil fuels. Basically, everything in this world is a carbon-based, you know, basically chemistry. And so, anything could be turned into fuel, you know. Everything, just about everything under the sun could be used for fuel, including water. You know, water is one of the most amazing ones I've talked about on the Mad Science Show quite a few times, but, you know, people don't take it to extremes because they've been told that, you know, there were certain things not possible. And so with that said, we buy our gasoline at the gas station, and they buy it from the, you know, the oil that's in the raw form, and then it's refined at refineries, and then basically shipped over to all the different fuel stations. And, you know, think about all the different oil companies involved in all this kind of stuff, and all the jobs out there. So they obviously wouldn't want anything to do with alternative energies, you know, electric cars. They've been around since way back in the 1800s, or maybe even prior to that, who knows. But either way, the electric car industry hit a brick wall from start to finish, because if you're selling gasoline, you don't want everybody to know that you could run around using a car that doesn't require gasoline, because there's competition in the mix there. You know, electric cars back in the 70s, they weren't nothing really to look at. They were kind of ugly-looking cars, but the concept could have been improved on. And even into modern-day society, you know, for a while their electric cars was kind of cool. Everybody was talking about the hole in the ozone layer, and we needed to protect the ozone layer, so we're going to have to get some electric cars going on and all this alternative energy. So this isn't something that just started today. It's been going around since, you know, at least back in, you know, the late 60s and then 70s, where they're, even especially during the era of oil embargo, when they were talking about how they were having trouble getting oil or whatever. And so, you know, electric cars seemed like they were going to be the future of the industry for as far as transportation goes. at least for a ground base, because at that time they didn't have electric airplanes like they do now. They've quite literally got electric airplanes now, because the technology for the electric motors and the battery technology is getting better, and motor controllers and stuff like that, and being able to, you know, produce a lot more energy for the output side of it. But anyway, so I just threw a whole lot of stuff in the mix here. You know, went everywhere from mud fossils to giants to elves to, you know, the Egyptians having, you know, pyramids that were producing electricity to, you know, everything else. It's just, I typed a message in the chat room. I said, what if history was as you were told but portrayed as a fairy tale or myth? You know, like, for example, Paul Bunyan, and how the one version of the cartoon that you watch of Paul Bunyan, he's dragging his axe and he makes the Grand Canyon and stuff like that. And even, people out there saying things like there are trees that used to be at one point in time 6 miles tall, or a man that might have been a mile or two tall. That's a pretty high, that's a pretty big dude. But the way that our mindset is today, it's almost unbelievable. It was, if everything in history was portrayed as a myth or a fairy tale, you know, it's just, just for entertainment purposes or whatever, it makes it even harder for you to be able to believe in, you know, anything that probably would have come out that would have been reality, because reality, it was more in like the magical realm or something like that. I imagine at certain points there were people that saw Nikola Tesla holding a light bulb up and, you know, not being plugged in, he's just holding it and it's lighting up in midair. They might have thought he was into some sort of witchcraft or something like that. How does he do that? But modern science shows us that if we take a magnetic field and we pulse it rapidly at high frequencies, we can energize gas into the fourth state of matter and basically produce light and heat at the same time. So in the process of understanding how energy travels and all the different possibilities, ways to produce energy, you open up basically Pandora's box of so many millions of different questions, it's mind-blowing. And so we're kind of like, as far as I'm concerned, we're rediscovering something that had been, you know, common knowledge probably at one point in time. And that the mud fossil flood, that if you ever want to take some time to take a look into it, the mud floods is a really interesting deal, where it shows buildings that when they start excavating, if you ever notice, whenever they go out there and dig, like in Egypt or different places all over the world, there are buildings, entire cities, that are under dirt. It's like they got flooded in. So it lends credence to this big massive flood at one point in history, or maybe multiple times, you know. Mud volcanoes or mud flows coming down from the side of hills or whatever, you know, covering in entire towns. But there are buildings out there that they had built right on top of buildings that already had part of the foundation was still sticking up out of the ground. And so there's people that goes through and they look at all these old pictures of all these old buildings, and they see, you know, where they built the foundation over the top of, you know, where you got arched windows and stuff. And people had, dug out all these old places, and they were, you know, like pretty deep underneath the ground. Or even going to the extremes of giants. It's kind of hard to contemplate on somebody being, you know, taller than 6 or 7 feet now. You know, maybe somebody 100 foot tall. That would be completely unbelievable. So we got a whole lot of catching up to do with science and everything that we've been told in history's past is we don't know anything today, really. we know what we can of what science or physics was basically taught in school and what we can do with it today. We understand how to produce electricity, some of the terminology. I disagree with some of the terminology. There's a good potential that the electron theory isn't even plausible, that maybe it's not what we believe. The example that I can give of that is that when you got a current being induced via electricity, you put electricity to a coil of wire, for every single turn that you got, you'll have a magnetic field that's generated in that coil of wire, whether it be all the electrons I got to use the electron theory because it's the only way to plausibly explain what it is that I'm trying to say. So they're saying that the flow of electrons is actually what is producing the magnetic field. So you got one coil of wire, one turn of wire, and it will produce a certain size magnetic field according to the gauge of the wire that it's actually, traveling through. So maybe the electrons aren't necessarily, moving through there. Maybe they're just wobbling back and forth, but that interaction causes an effect that produces a magnetic field. And so that magnetic field is a certain size, like I said, determined by the gauge of the wire that it's surrounded. So the magnetic field is spinning around this one loop of wire, and it's got a strength, a certain strength depending on how much power you put to it to begin with. So for every turn, you got the equivalence of the same strength of magnetic field. And each one of these magnetic fields will combine with each other. So anytime two magnetic fields come in contact with each other, they basically couple with one another and become one field. So now you've got two turns that is double the strength of the single turn. And for every single turn you add thereafter, it will keep on doing the same exact thing. Those fields will all couple and you got this really strong magnetic field. And depending on how you pulse it, you will either turn a rotor or, whatever, by that fluctuation in the field from north to south. The opposites will be attracting each other and the positives will be repelling each other. So you got basically electricity that's turning an electric motor and so on. And in the reverse, whenever you're spinning the magnets past the coils of wire, you're doing it in the opposite fashion there. So one way inducing a magnetic field is to put current to a coil of wire, and one is by spinning magnets back. So we got something that's in common with both of them, and that's the magnetic field itself. So it could very well possibly be that what we call electricity hasn't got anything to do with electron motion or not. It could very well be with the magnetic field itself, that it's that spinning magnetic field trying to right itself that's producing the effect that we call electricity. And depending on the strength of this magnetic field will determine on how much current flow is going out the other side, or even how fast. So for example, if you've got a thick gauge wire that you're running a lot of current through, and like on a microwave oven transformer, you have a really thin gauge wire, so that whenever you're inducing the current into the primary of the microwave oven transformer, you're sending a lot of current through there, producing a really strong magnetic field. That the strong magnetic field in turn is producing in the iron core, which is used to slow the field down and allow for full saturation time, that it would then in turn produce eddy currents, what we call eddy currents, in the metal, causing that metal to get hot because you're actually putting too much energy to that transformer core and it can't get rid of it fast enough, so it's actually producing heat, which at a certain time frame, your insulation on your wire would reach a thermal breakdown point and fail and short it out and make that process even worse, because now you got a dead short. You got all this energy going in there and basically, you know, causing it to get hot. So anyway, from the primary coil, you're now transferring that magnetic field over to the secondary coil, which then in turn is a really thin wire. So every single turn on that little thin wire is a magnetic field that's spinning around that that copper wire, and in a really short pattern, really fast. The larger gauge wire was a little slower magnetic field spinning around, and so now you're actually raising the voltage up by that really high speed magnetic field that's being spun around that wire. And so it takes more of these wires to, whenever you add the next wire beside of it, you actually strengthen that magnetic field, but you're still going so fast that you're actually producing high voltage on the secondary as opposed to what you put in on the input of the primary. So you got thousands of turns of really thin gauge wire, and these magnetic fields are traveling around this really super thin wire, but they're moving really fast because they don't have a lot of surface area. So it's like the difference between a whirlpool, if you make a circle in a pool with a really large diameter, as opposed to a circle in the pool with a little tiny diameter. You know, you get the water moving faster right in the general vicinity there, but it's different on that larger one. You got more volume to try to move around. So I'm not trying to use all kinds of high-tech terminology to explain what it is that I'm trying to say to you. What I'm just trying to say is that if you look at magnetism in a different way than the standard model of how electricity is actually generated, it could very well be that the magnetic field isn't necessarily what we thought it was to begin with. I mean, if you look out to, let's say hypothetically that the pyramids were, you know, a big generator, and you got a lot of energetic things happening. You got lightning in the sky. You got the static electric charge, almost like the Lord Kelvin generator, producing electrical charge from the aquifers underneath that's interacting with the granite stones inside there that are basically being, all that static charge is being contained in there by a limestone covering that goes over the top of this, so you can guide this energy where you want it to go, and then getting all the way up to the very top as this energy's pulsing, you know, with basically the heartbeat of whatever's going on in nature. Then there, that would determine that frequency range of how fast that field is actually, traveling, whatever. It's like the waves in the water that I keep talking about when you're tapping on the water and you see those waves going out. Or if you understand how the Tesla coil is working, where it's shooting the energy across the spark gap, and every time one of them pulses goes across that gap, it pulses a magnetic field, and basically, sends that wave up the secondary that does in turn the same exact thing, the magnetic fluctuation to change between the north and south pole as the field is expanding and collapsing is producing an energy wave. But because of the way the secondary on the Tesla coil is actually designed, you're ramping up the voltage. You know, when you ramp up the voltage, according to the standard model, you lose the current. And so, you know, it takes a lot of current in order to do that in some instance, but with modern day technology where you can actually take transistors or MOSFETs to act as that fast acting switch and pulse a power source, you can get those higher frequencies with a whole lot less input than you would have otherwise, like for example using the old style Tesla coils or stuff like that. But nonetheless, all we're doing is we're moving this energy around. We're sending waves through that's interacting with whatever medium that it's in. And so that process has a side effect that we call electricity. Whether it be static electric, you know, when even when you're rubbing, you know, cloth across there, you're actually pushing and pulling energy back and forth, and when it's trying to snap back into place, it's actually producing electric charge on there. So I'm just looking at the possibility that energy might not be exactly what we were told in school books, and the actual electron theory may actually have to be rewritten at some point, you know, to basically tell it the way it really is. Either way, that's neither here nor there whenever you're trying to find free energy to run your house. And so when you're looking out there at all these other different old style devices and stuff like that, there's clues in them. Like, for example, when I talked about the Mercury arc rectifier being the first plasma reactor that I knew about, it may not have been the first plasma reactor. If the Egyptians were actually using fluorescent style bulbs, they had the makeup for a plasma reactor back in the day, because they're basically energizing a gas, getting these you know, according to modern day theory, they're exchanging electrons or bombarding inside there, and all this is producing friction, which in turn is producing heat, which according to science, light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. however you want to look at it, it's, you know, it's really hard to take modern day science serious, because even the terminology is a hindrance anymore. You know, when you go out there and you try to read the laws of thermodynamics, it's aggravating, because basically the laws of thermodynamics try to say things aren't possible unless you go out there and actually do the experiment yourself, and then you'll realize that things are possible. There are pluses of the laws of thermodynamics that if you understand what the makeup of any given material is, you'll understand what you can do with it. You can manipulate it. For example, water. Water is the prime one that drives me insane, because water is one of the most amazing, you know, energy sources ever. And it's indestructible. When you look at how it's actually made up and what's done with it, if you're going out there, it's middle of July and it's hot, and you watch this mud puddle evaporate, and you think, wow, water all dried up. Well, that water didn't dry up. It evaporated in and basically separated into a gas and floated off. You know, so it's still there. You haven't, according to the laws of physics, you know, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So that mud puddle, while it isn't on the ground anymore, is still part of the system. It's still out there. And so, if you understand that portion right there, and then you understand that, you know, they say that water is the most stable molecule. It doesn't like to be tampered with, but, you know, there are certain forces in nature that will cause water to separate and evaporate and mix back into all the atmosphere that surrounds us, and that you can't burn a liquid. It you can't compress a liquid. So that's one of the things that they try to use, that, well, you can't use water as fuel because you can't compress a liquid. Well, that's ridiculous for them to even say that, because we know that at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, we can boil water into steam. You know, we can boil water, get it boiling, and then you'll see steam coming off the top of that water. It's beginning to evaporate. So we know how, with different procedures, actually be able to change the form of that energy into something completely different, where it's no longer a liquid, now it's a gas, where now it is compressible. And we can even take that even farther, and we can actually break that gas down into even finer, smaller molecules, and break it all down to where you know, it basically finally gets to the point of separation, where the oxygen goes one way and the hydrogen goes the other way. They do this in hydrogen technology using electrolysis, where they brute force crack the hydrogen and oxygen apart. And there are other methods out there, some of which people have seen in videos on YouTube, where you can use high voltage, high frequency radio waves to separate the hydrogen and oxygen on demand. So we can actually engineer engines that will use water as fuel, and the exhaust that comes out the other side is basically, you know, water. So all we did was, by separating the hydrogen and oxygen, was get a result that ended up in an electric discharge. And when it was all said and done, we didn't even destroy the water. So it's mind-blowing to me that we're not even using that as a fuel source. But in the oil industry, why would you want people to engineer machinery that would run on pure distilled water and then actually have a perfectly clean exhaust coming out the other side, when you want to be able to sell them oil that comes out of the ground that basically uses heat and pressure, you know, by burning this oil, exploding it inside of a chamber? If you're talking about gasoline, then you get an explosion that pushes down a piston that does some mechanical work. Or in the instance of a diesel engine, that whenever you burn it, the heat expansion inside there, pressure, that pushes down the piston. So one of them you're exploding the fuel in, and the other one you're expanding it via heat and pressure in there. And at a certain point, you don't even need the electric charge for the glow plugs, because once the cylinder gets up to pressure, we already been told that when you compress a gas, it gets hot. So now you don't even need no extra input. You're just using that heat to ignite the fuel, called compression ignition, you know. So there's two simple ways that you're burning the same type of fuel, you know, and it doesn't matter whether what type of gas you're talking about, if it has any kind of explosive or implosive qualities to it, you can get work done out of it by doing that. So if back in the Egyptian times that they actually had things that they figured out that you could actually have fluorescent style lighting, you would have wireless energy transfer. You wouldn't need a bunch of electrical wire running through there to run resistive type of tungsten element lighting systems that are producing the heat. You could actually transmit, you know, energy wirelessly. If you were standing inside this field, this pyramid, it probably wouldn't even be harmful to you. The equivalence of Tesla standing next to his Tesla coil while that high frequency, high voltage energy is being transmitted through the air in just about every direction, and then eventually guided out that golden capstone at the side, sent out to everybody and his brother out to the world or whatever. So maybe, just maybe, putting the school books down and looking at things slightly different, the atmospheric energy that's available out there, if you took every single one of these towers out there and you had a way to insulate the frame of the tower and insulate the cables away from the tower, but still make it strong enough to be able to hold, you could pull electricity right out of the air. If there was a way to build a spark gap system in that cable that was actually insulated, you could use that cable itself as an earth ground and a spark gap, and basically turn that tower into the equivalence of a Tesla coil by adding some primaries or secondary windings on there. You could actually determine the frequency range, and by the distance of the spark gap, you could actually determine the speed at which you're going to be pulsing that frequency as well. So There's unlimited potential of already existing technologies being retrofitted to actually produce what Tesla tried to do back in the day. But, you know, of course the story goes that J.P. Morgan wasn't going to have no part of it. If he can't meter it, then he can't sell nobody electricity, so he didn't want to have no part of it. You know, so he pulled his funding out. That's probably one of the reasons why the majority of everything that could have been already accomplished today isn't a reality, because everything that I'm talking about is based on real science, the scientific method, which, you know, is observation. You know, you observe it, you test it, you retest it, you see if it's falsifiable or whatever. Let me look it up so I can read it out directly, because, you know, a lot of this stuff I'm bringing right out of the top of my head while I'm thinking and speaking at the same time. Scientific method, I'm going to type that in so that I can read it. There it is. Scientific method. The actual real science, you know. Scientific method, a method of procedures that has characterized natural science since the 17th century, consisting in systematic observation, measurement, and experiment, and formulation, testing, and modifications of hypotheses. There's a lot of high-tech terminology in there. Anyway, you try it before you deny it, for one, and you look at it, you redo it, and see how many times you get the same exact result, and it might just be something that could be turned into more than just a theory. There's another version of it. Scientific method is an empirical method of knowledge acquisition which has characterized the development of natural science since the 17th century. That's coming from Wikipedia. Alright, well, anyway, so by testing and observing, we can actually finally understand how energy is actually traveling, and every so often, the mainstream science community will actually inadvertently, in the process of trying to put their own spin on things and make it so difficult so the average Joe can't understand it, put in some little nuggets of truth that actually give you a clue on how things really function if you step back and look at the overall grand scheme of things. So, may very well be that there's a lot of theories out there that might have to be readdressed or rewritten so that we can get up with the times. Things that Tesla showed us back in the day, you know, people always trying to say crazy stuff about Tesla or whatever. But a lot of his research basically is the reason why our modern day society has so many cool tools. You know, a lot of radios and computers and technology came about from his research. And I'm not saying that his was the only research that was involved in it. There was other people out there researching things as well. But I don't think he got enough credit for all the things that he actually did in his life or whatever. But as far as history and everything is, what purpose would somebody have for not wanting you, the average Joe, to know certain things, whether it be in mechanics or electrical or even history itself, like this mud flood thing? Why would you want to hide something like that? That there was this great flood at one time that basically sunk all these towns and everything. The only thing that even comes to mind in any energy conversation of reasons why people wouldn't be able to know things is basically control. You know, if you want to stay rich, if you're selling a product, you obviously don't want somebody else coming along saying, hey, you can get that for free. So guys like me would be classified as a crackpot. They called, pseudoscience, saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. So, basically, I just don't agree with the way that modern day science has basically let the human race down, because we could have been and should be so much further advanced right now than what we are. But for the greed of humanity or whatever, it's we're in a mess. Supposedly there are people in this world that are dying of starvation, and supposedly there's wars going on all over the place, and people fighting over resources and such, and even in the gold industry or the diamond or the silver, you know, it all has to do with money. We gotta run around and kill each other to get all this kind of stuff. So I think, you know, guys like Nikola Tesla, from what I understood of his life and what he was trying to say about being able to get energy, free energy, out to the people, because if you think about it logically, if you didn't have to fight over oil, if there wasn't no reason, if oil didn't have a value to it, if it was just, you know, another fuel source, but you could do the same thing that you do with oil, you could do that with water. Or you could do it with grass clippings, or, you know, any biological waste that died off, or plant life that died off, or whatever. If you could turn those same materials into that same exact fuel using pressure and heat, then you wouldn't have no reason to be fighting over something that is so incredibly abundant. But the power structures and the governments of the world, they got to have that money. They got to have the tax base, and the companies, they want to stay wealthy. So, you know, why allow anybody like myself to get out here and talk about free energy? Don't make no sense. Because you would lose your money. If I proved to the world today that there was a free energy device that they could use to do exactly the work that they need done with all the current watts and amps that they could ever use, then the electric company would be out of business. You know, and I don't even think the electric company would completely go out of business, because I believe that there are certain people who just don't want to mess with it, and it's easier to buy something. If you really seriously want to be intellectually honest, even if you come out with a free energy device today, and you either sell it or give it to people out there, there are still going to be people who would rather just pay for somebody else to do the work for them. They would rather pay somebody else to maintain it. So I don't want to buy this free energy device, because if it ever breaks down, I have to fix it, and I don't know how to fix it, and I don't want to deal with it. I just want to live my life. And so they still want electricity, so they will buy it from the power company. So even in that circumstance, if a free energy device comes out there on the market, unless everybody and his brother went out and bought it, the power company would still be in business. They'd still be able to make money. Of course, the people that were on the power grid would probably be paying more for electricity, because now there's not as many customers, so they have to jack up the price in order to stay in business. But nonetheless, it's becoming I think that we've been lied to in so many different ways for so long, from everything from history, the true history of the world, to alternative energies, or any energy for that matter, that we've been lied to for so long that we're stuck in this doggone rut of how to basically reclaim our independence from the power structures out there. You know, I say if we actually had a team of people, and in 30 days' time, if we set our mind down to engineering any given device, such as an engine that would run on pure distilled water using all the known laws of physics and science that is available right now, that within 30 days' time, with the right team of people, you'd actually have that accomplished. You know, myself, I've got so many ideas that I try to keep on pumping out there, hoping to inspire other people to take these ideas and run with them so that we can benefit humanity by giving people who need electricity that can't afford electricity, you know, just that. And it isn't just about electricity. It's even to the extent of better ways to grow food, more efficient ways to work in harmony with nature. It's just mind-blowing at all the solutions that are available, but you can't seem to get people on board with wanting to get things done. You know, the science is there. The physics is there. The resources, the materials are there. But the manufacturing portion, the talent that actually requires, you know, like for example, I got a device that I want to build, right? I don't have all the tools that I need to build what I want to build. And even if I did have those tools, I'd have to take a long time to learn how to run them and do all the mathematics required to get the precision down. But there are people already out there who have that knowledge in their head. That's their job. That's their best skill set. And so they already know how to do that. So you bring that dream team together of all these different brilliant individuals, and you know, you get things done. That's just it's just hard to try to rally the troops, so to speak. But if electricity is different than what we've been taught, and it's actually been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years or longer, who knows? You really couldn't get, you know, there are people who will right short come out here and mock and ridicule any kind of religious or spiritual beliefs or anything like that. Or anything that they disagree with, they'll jump on the bandwagon, and they will have to use you know, knowledge that was given to them by the system itself in order to try to prop up their version of whatever story that they're telling, whichever, you know, why this is a lie and this is true or whatever. In reality, none of us can rely on any information that had been given to us prior unless we're actually willing to do the test and work. We're just going on theories and faith that whoever told us what they told us was telling the truth. The scientific observation is where you're like physically watching and measuring and testing and repeating your test and all this kind of stuff. And you can come across new discoveries that you then in turn share with people. But a lot of the discoveries that are made out there aren't being made by the average Joe. And even if they're rediscoveries, they're still not being made by the average Joe. They're being made by brilliant minds in corporations and brilliant minds in government entities that, you know, like for example, NASA, you know. They get a lot of money per day, and they do a lot of research, but the research that they do gets patented underneath somebody other than the people. If you understand what I'm saying, you might get benefits here and there by a better iPhone that you buy or whatever, you know, better computer, faster computers, you might get a little benefit from that. But as far as humanity itself not going to war over what they classify as fossil fuels or energy for that matter, you know, there are people out there living in, you know, poor conditions that they shouldn't have to be living like that. They shouldn't have to be, you know, starving. They shouldn't have to be drinking dirty water. We have technologies available to us. If we were really caring of one another, we could resolve all these problems in the world and make things good for everybody. And imagine if you didn't have to pay an electric bill or a fuel bill for your car. Or imagine if you could still have the luxuries that you got today and be able to do, you know, go through life with, you know, less expenses, you know, it'd almost be better if you, you know, provide a service for somebody, they provide a service for you, you know, kind of like the old barter system. I'll come over and help you do some work for you, and you'll come over and help me do some work, and we'll just, that's how we'll pay one another, instead of, you know, passing off of a dollar bill or something that may be used as some sort of violent means to control the world or whatever. Now, that all sounds conspiratorial, but that word, conspiracy, it's another one of those terms, just like in the laws of physics, where you talk about zero point or over unity, or even the word free energy, words free energy for that matter, is basically puts you in a category of the stupid, so that other people who might be interested won't be as interested or believe it's even possible because of that particular label that's been put on you, the tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist kind of craziness. And so even your fellow brothers and sisters will be your worst enemy trying to find your way through the alternative energy community and getting answers and actual real results, not from some sham artist out there trying to sell you some bogus free energy device, or some other one just trying to get clicks on there, so put these things together and put all this fake stuff, when in reality, if they just followed basic science and the laws of physics, they would have already done it. They would have already been able to do it. According to what we understand about water, water is a powerful tool. It is a powerful element. Most stable molecule on the planet is what they say. And can be the most destructive water on the planet. So if you listen to that mud flood thing, water's got the capability of eroding dirt and everything. And just like the tsunami that the guy was explaining, it's picking up mud, crud, and sticks, and bricks, and glass, and all that. And so if you was a giant or anybody trying to get swim through that water, you'd be getting chopped all up. You'd be getting destroyed because that water is powerful. Not only does it have the hydraulic pressure to push whatever through you or you down the river, whatever, but it has the capability of picking up stuff on the way by, so it's a really powerful force. You could use water in hydraulic systems instead of having to use hydraulic fluid. But the reason why we use hydraulic fluid is because water, because it has oxygen in there, will cause things to oxidize and rust. But in the right materials, water would be just fine. You can put stainless steel, your water in stainless steel, and it won't rust. And under the right circumstances, you could build the perfect machinery that you would use water not only to lift things with hydraulics, but to use it as fuel to run the engine that's turning the pumps that actually run the hydraulics. So we have unlimited potential. And if these people in the past actually knew if ancient electricity actually existed, then we're just kind of reinventing the wheel, trying to rediscover it, because those that are in the know, the upper echelons of society, so to speak, the rich folks, the bankers, or corporations, they already know what we're saying is true and it is possible, but it's not something that they want you to have access to, because that type of knowledge in the people's hands would ensure that we could level the playing field, so to speak. It means that if we found somebody who needed fresh water, we got the technology, we can make it happen. We, the people, would make it happen. If somebody needed heating and cooling systems, we know how to move that energy. We know how to do heat transfers. We know how to do all kinds of stuff. We know how to use the sun for cooking, the sun for heating. Even in the dead of winter, the energy from the sun is still doing work. Solar panels, you know, producing electrical charges and such. We know how to store this energy. We know how to do so much. And putting all these pieces of the puzzle on the table for everybody to benefit is the reason why mad science is doing what it's doing. Mad science isn't because we're crazy and we just got jacked up hair. Mad science is the fact that science has basically sold humanity down a road. But science, the mainstream science industry, has basically sold their souls to the devil. If you believe in the devil. It don't matter. Nonetheless, sold itself to the dark side. You know? Like a Darth Vader or whatever. However you want to look at it. I don't care. The fact of the matter is, you're taught one thing in school and you're told another in society. You're not told the truth about history. You're not told the truth about, you know, anything. And when you start looking at all these things like mud, fossils, and giants, and ancient electricity, and even UFOs for that matter, don't matter. You realize how many conspiracy theories there are out there. You know, and people will sit around and waste their entire lifetime arguing over, you know, doom and gloom, and we're all going to freaking die because this ancient planet's coming in to blast us, or aliens are coming down to, you know, do whatever to us. It's just crazy. It's just beyond crazy. The psychological aspect of what you find out here on the internet itself is so incredibly destructive to what we could actually accomplish. It's mind-blowing. And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking to myself, I'm trying to rally the troops out there. I'm trying to find other people that think like myself and want to get together and build things to prove it's possible. I believe that the government already knows it's possible. And I believe that there are corporations out there that already know it's possible. And some of the UFOs that you see out there in the sky might very well be our own. You know, there are people out there who will argue whether the earth is round or whether it's flat or whether it's hollow and all this kind of craziness. If you think the earth is flat, or you think it's round, and you want to prove your point, you want everybody in the world to know the truth, then utilize all the science and physics and technology available to you and prove it. Prove it one way or another. Put up or shut up and stop arguing about it. There ain't no reason for people to be, you know, doing without in a world that is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. It recycles every single thing. There's nothing on this world or in this realm that doesn't recycle. Every single thing out there, nature recycles everything. No matter what it is. And even when mankind tears something up, nature comes back in and rebuilds it. For whatever reason, this planet was set up to the extent where we can't even mess it up. We can kill each other. Heck, we can kill off all the everything. We can kill off all the living creatures on the planet. But you know what? The moment we're gone, especially if the evolutionists are telling the truth, then it's all coming back. Might have done it thousands of times over and over. They might be right. This planet might be billions of years over. There might be civilizations after civilizations after civilizations that continuously made the same doggone mistake, blew each other up, and when the whole system finally killed off everything alive on there, it restarted back again. But there's got to come a time when people got to stop repeating the same doggone thing in the past. There's got to come a time when, if we're ever to exceed or get out of this prison that we're in called life and boldly go where no man has gone before, we got to get our act together. if the planet is continuously resetting itself, like some people believe, like we build our civilizations up, and before we get too far, somehow or another, we get this great massive flood or an earthquake or natural disaster or worldwide calamity or whatever, and it all have to start over again. And those who do get lucky and survive, they see these big giant pyramids out there, and they're like, ooh, that must have been the gods that did that. I don't know. You know, how would you explain that? So many questions. But as far as electricity goes, you know, free energy, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Because on the Mad Science Show, we have explained ad nauseum tons and tons and tons of ways. There are materials that you can mix together that will exchange electrons. There are materials that will ignore each other. There are materials for insulation qualities, you know, differences just in ways that you can build capacitors, you know, the different dielectrics qualities of different types of materials and whatever. You know, and the way that you can actually introduce an electrolyte in between two dissimilar metals and produce a battery, electrical charge. You think that that isn't actually happening in nature? If you got a copper mine and then you got an iron deposit anywhere near, and somehow or another some of the salt water from the ocean seeps down in between those two, that it's not actually going to create a process that's going to be like electrolysis, or, you know, even you know, produce an electric charge. Everything as far as electricity is basically based off of nature. I'm trying to replicate what nature does, the power of what nature's already done. That, so if people somehow or another figured out a way to harness nature, such as when we very first started using big old wheels to allow the river to turn a big old wheel that then in turn either turned some sort of air compressor or turned some sort of gear that turned some sort of grinding wheel, and we were able, or even a saw blade for that matter, we were able to use what nature had provided, which was the water, flowing of the water, and all that water pressure was able to get work done. We figured that out. And then the hydroelectric dam, same process. You know, we was able to use it this type of method for sawmills and grain mills and such. So why couldn't we use it to turn these generators now that we've discovered how to spin magnets past a coil of wire and produce what we now call electricity? So, it's no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse why we can't make this world better. So, what I'm trying to ask everybody out there, regardless of whether you believe ancient electricity existed or giants or any of this other stuff, is how to answer the hardest question of all. How do we get people to get past the indoctrination of the system and begin to seriously work with one another to bring their talents to bear to end this debate once and for all? It's like the difference between the flat earthers and the round earthers. Some of them say, well, science said, and this is that, and it's already been proven, so you're stupid for even thinking about it. Well, maybe they are, but maybe they're not. Maybe what you think is the truth isn't the truth. Maybe the history that has been told isn't the history that is true. Maybe like the comment that I put in the chat room, what if history was as you were told, but portrayed as a fairy tale or a myth? What if the Titans were real? What if there really were giants on the land? How in the heck would you know? You wouldn't know if you're only 40 or 50 years old. All you know is what you were told. That's it. What you were raised up to believe in, what you were taught in school, that's all you know. That's the extent of your information. And you can go out and read books all day long. But if any given book is questionable, then they're all questionable because the story is that they were written by a man, and man can be deceptive or greedy. Doesn't mean that they didn't write a doggone story in order to keep you in line. The laws of physics set there to keep you in place so that the forbidden knowledge that you're not supposed to have, maybe we were never supposed to have the knowledge of energy or nature. Maybe we were just supposed to be running around and in the Garden of Eden and having the world itself be our caretaker, and we take care of each other. Maybe that's the way it was meant to be. And that's why every time we get so powerful that we get a big head or whatever, some outside force decides to put us back in our place. Maybe nature itself. It's hard to say. But you won't know, and you couldn't know, unless you did the research yourself, unless you actually got down to the brass tacks of plugging this in to see if it blows up, and recycling, and seeing how things work. Ever since I was a child, I've taken things apart and made attempts to put them back together. Sometimes I succeeded and sometimes I failed, but in that process I learned. Tried to share all that knowledge with everybody and his brother. And I actually invented things, at least believed that I invented things before somebody else invented them. Only to find out later on that maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong, but either way it was already on market, and so, you know, I was the poor inventor that never succeeded. But I have a mechanical understanding of how this world actually works. Don't have the terminology that'll agree with the school book. Don't have the terminology to explain it in a way that would impress the professor, so to speak. And the terminology that's already been laid down in the books is already there to debunk anything that I say, so that if I speak out on what I've witnessed, then you're not going to believe it because you were told differently. Did we go to the moon in 1969? Had we been there since? Did we do all these things? Do we got probes out in space? Did we send one to Pluto? Do we have rovers on Mars? Do we have a space station in space? Do we have doggone satellites? Do we have anything? Is the Earth round, flat, concave, convex, hollow? Is the moon a hologram? Or is it a spaceship? You get my point? How in the heck are you going to know unless you stop believing what everyone else says and get out there and check it out yourself? How will you know for real that anything is for real? How will you know if we're not even living in a doggone simulation? We might very well be a thought in an artificial intelligent mind that's floating somewhere in the vastness of space, and it's already happened and we just think it's still going on. Boy, that sure gives you a whole lot to think about, doesn't it? But let's say hypothetically that I might be close to a theory that has to do with magnetism. And that once you turn voltage and current into a magnetic field at a certain strength, and you transfer that energy across to a secondary, and you're running it through a smaller gauge wire, and then you're ramping that voltage up, which in the process of doing that process, you have losses in the transformer core itself, whether it be ferrite or iron laminate core. And so those losses are actually a decrease in your current. But if there was a way that you could ensure that you moved all that energy forward and had absolutely no losses in there, such as building an efficient transformer that would allow you to move this magnetic field in a smooth method to get all that energy to the other side. If you wanted to ramp that voltage up really high without any losses, and you re-engineered that, but then you needed to be able to bring that energy back down to a usable current again, so that essentially you'd have a one-to-one transformer. Whatever you put in this side, you're going to get out that side. And if some losses are acceptable, then you can do, other things with that transformer as well, such as heating. But nonetheless, so now if you have an understanding of like the equivalence of plumbing, you've got a large pipe that will hold a certain amount of volume of water. It also has an outer diameter of surface area, just like a smaller pipe would only hold so much water, and also has an outer diameter of surface area. So you know that whether you're on the inside of that pipe, you can only push so much volume down that pipe. And whether you're on the outside of the pipe, you can only push so much volume on the outside of that pipe because of the surface area. It also has to do with capacitance as well. But nonetheless, in the smaller pipe, same thing. You can only fit so much wire down that small pipe, and you can only fit so much so much on the outside of that smaller pipe. So much volume, so much current, whichever term you want to use. So, knowing that these magnetic fields that we're talking about actually couple. If you take two large pipes and you're pumping that much volume down these two large pipes, when it gets out the other side, you got a whole lot of current. Two smaller pipes, you can't push quite the volume through there, but when you get down the other side, you got a whole lot of pressure. So that's the difference, is the current going up or the voltage going up. So now that you understand that and you want to be able to get this high voltage back into current again, if you take one pipe that has a lot of high pressure and then you spread that high pressure out over a whole bunch of the same size pipes but multiples that are the equivalents of the first large pipe that you was using, now you just increase the surface area and you're able to allow that that voltage to slow back down, combine with each other, and make one really strong magnetic field with a lot of current on the other side. So it may very well be as simple as the way that we engineer our transformers of how we can move this energy from point A to point B in a one-to-one ratio without absolutely any losses whatsoever. Once we have an understanding of where that water's going, where that electricity's going, and what things that we need to insulate so that none of that energy is lost in the process of the transfer. There are purposes for high voltage. There's purposes for high current. Both of which we can get using the modern methods of how we actually induce a current into things. Both of them can be done more efficiently. We don't have to put too much power to a transformer in order to be able to get what we want out of the second side, unless there's a lot of losses in the first side that we're losing more trying to get it across to the other side. I hope that what I'm saying makes sense to you, because if you get an understanding of how this energy is actually traveling, then that means from this point on we can re-engineer equipment to be so much more efficient than what it is and what it has been, and rediscover some of these old ancient electricity methods that maybe they knew about in the past that we don't know now because it wasn't taught in the history class. It wasn't taught in science class. When I was going to science class, they never showed me the Mercury arc rectifier. Had I known about that back then, as I'm growing up, I would have done research on that because it was really interesting that what the capabilities of that. If you think about the nuclear industry and how energy is actually used in a nuclear power plant, you're talking about something as simple as radiant energy. These highly refined radioactive materials that all crammed into one place, they naturally deteriorate, and in the process of naturally deteriorating, they release energy. Well, that energy that's being released is actually interacting with whatever magnetic field or atmosphere that's around it. And since we're told that water is a dipole molecule, then as this energy is being released, it's moving rapidly, and it's moving rapidly enough that it's interacting with that positive and negative field of water molecule and causing it to basically move so fast, rock back and forth, that it's rubbing up against other molecules, which is producing friction, which in turn produces heat that boils that water into steam. And then that steam is pressurized down through the piping that blows across turbines that turn big old gears that turn a generator head that produces the electric charge that we use today. Basically, the only difference is the method. They're using pressure from a hydroelectric where water is coming over a dam to do the same exact job, or you're using the steam pressure because you took the water and you changed the form of that water into a completely different state and was able to use the effects of what the water is actually doing, either one being hydraulic pressure or the other being steam pressure. Nonetheless, it's the same energy. So if you'd understood the Mercury arc rectifier back in the day, you could have used that same concept of how the noble gas the mercury was basically shorted out, heated up, vaporized, and then energized into plasma and producing a rectifier that would change high voltage AC into high voltage DC. So you basically moved it, changed it from one state of matter, and was able to run Edison's elevator motors off of Tesla's AC current. And it's all the same energy. But you would have been able to, instead of spending all the money on highly refining radioactive rods to make a nuclear power plant, you could have built a plasma reactor that would have done the same exact job using high voltage, high frequency energy to energize that gas or that water molecule so rapidly that you would boil it and produce steam that would do the same exact job for less input. And less danger as far as that goes. Because now you don't have this highly radioactive material, which is only dangerous to you because of the fact that you're 3/4 water. And so if you're anywhere near it, you're going to boil just like the water would have boiled. So that's why you can't hold it in your hand. Maybe Galen Windsor, the video nuclear scare scam, maybe he was on to something. Maybe he knew a little bit more than people, wanted to give him credit for. They might have said he was crazy just so you wouldn't try and see what it was that he was talking about would be the truth. So, I got a mechanical understanding of the world. I look out into this world, I see the state of affairs that we're in, and I think I want to try to make it better. A lot of people muddy up the water with all kinds of crazy scenarios and theories and stuff like that. I feel like I would rather use these crazy scenario theories or whatever to basically get a point across. And that point being that we're all pretty sure we've been lied to about something. but if we've been lied to, we can use all this knowledge of things that could have been possible to actually use the scientific method to find out whether or not it was real or not. Whether or not it was truth or fiction or fairy tale or myth. There was a show where the Mythbusters did a basically a hit piece on hydrogen technology. And that one particular show made me angry. To this day, I will not watch any Mythbusters shows. They lost their credibility when they basically sold their soul to the system. I almost said devil again. Maybe they did sell their soul to the devil. Maybe they sold their soul to the dark side like Darth Vader. But nonetheless, they were intellectually dishonest. And they did a hit piece on hydrogen technology. They pumped pure hydrogen down into a carburetor. And when it flashed back and made a big boom, then they turned around and said, well, maybe that's the reason why we don't use hydrogen technology. Now, if you go back and look in history, and I think it was the Hindenburg. Let me look this up so I can make sure I'm not misquoting this. Hindenburg. Boy, this is terrible for live radio. That's why I need somebody else to join me on here. Let's see if I spelled that wrong. I know I did. Hindenburg, that's it. The Hindenburg disaster occurred on May 6, 1937 in Manchester Township, New Jersey, United States. The German passenger airship LZ-129 Hindenburg caught fire and was destroyed during an attempt to dock with its mooring naval air station of people on board. I need to click on that because what I believe is they were using hydrogen in that particular one there. Let me see. I got to make sure. Where's it at? Broadcast. I still can't find it. Anyway, I believe the story goes that they were using hydrogen. I'm just trying to confirm it due to the ever so trustworthy Wikipedia. Disaster. Let's see. Anyway, there was other gases out there that they could have used, such as helium. You know, that wouldn't have caught fire like that. Could have basically changed the world because it would have not been such a massive disaster to scare people away from those types of ships. Okay, flames begin lower and farther aft near cell one behind rudders. Doggone it, where in the heck is it at? It's terrible for live radio. Alright, well, oh, okay, there it is. Although the hydrogen had finished burning, the Hindenburg diesel fuel burned for several more hours. So, yeah, they used hydrogen in there. So one of the reasons why they say we don't use hydrogen technology is because of this event where somebody thought it would be a good idea to use hydrogen inside of this big old blimp, the Zeppelin or whatever they called them back in the day. And so, you know, that's one of the things you'll hear when you talk about hydrogen technology and Mythbusters or whatever. The Hindenburg explosions, hydrogen danger, hydrogen bomb and all this kind of jazz. When in reality, there were other gases that were just as light or lighter than hydrogen. And so any gas that's lighter than air has a buoyancy and it'll float. So you put helium inside of a balloon and the balloon afloat. You blow a balloon up with just your breath and it has CO2 in it now. So the balloon is heavier than your air, so it falls to the ground. Now, it's a good possibility if you did not blow a balloon up and you blew it up with nothing but oxygen that it might not flow as low to the ground. It's hard to say. But anyway, those are testable. Those are all things that we can test to see if they work. And hydrogen technology isn't new technology. Stan Myers was doing it back in the 70s. And, you know, he was able to basically get enough information out there, not enough to get it onto the mainstream market so that every average Joe would have it, but enough to leak it out there to the public and get something started where people were at least looking into it again. And so, you know, with that said, there are hydrogen technology vehicles out there driving right now. There are hybrid electric vehicles out there driving right now. There are all types of fuels being used, everything from methane to propane. One of the guys that I talked to that delivers propane fuel to everybody, the same truck that he's delivering propane to homes is using that same fuel. So he's got this huge tank of propane on the back of his truck, and he drives his entire fleet on propane gas. So he ain't gonna run out of gas anytime soon. He's got a massive fuel tank on the back of his truck. But either way, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. It's not the fact that we don't have enough energy. It's the fact that we ain't figured out a way to use it efficiently. We ain't figured out a way to do what somebody possibly could have been doing years ago before we ever even knew about electricity. And so if the world keeps getting reset all the time, we got a lot of catching up to do. Maybe we're not even supposed to have this knowledge. Who knows? But either way, since the world is in the state of affairs that it's in, I feel like it's a good idea for, you know, us to try to make the world better by bringing some of this old technology back to light again. And hopefully this time around that if this is what happened, we don't destroy ourselves because we get too big-headed or whatever. Now we're talking about artificial intelligence coming in here and eventually taking over and merging with man, or maybe even to some extent, you know, basically getting rid of man. We put our consciousness into machines, and so we don't no longer need to be around anymore. Machines take on a life of their own and whatever, reach to some sort of singularity. There's people out there that's actually afraid of technology getting too advanced, where basically technology begins to enslave us. Well, we've already got people to do that, so what in the heck would we need artificial intelligence to do it for? So it seems like sometimes mankind is its own worst enemy. And so the voices of reason and common sense that are saying, hey, we got every solution necessary to resolve every problem in the world, why can't we all get together and just do it? That's the thing. Go up and Google up ancient electricity. Get on YouTube. There's tons and tons of videos where they show all kinds of different theories and all kinds of ideas of people that was using energy way before, you know, the supposed Baghdad battery and the light bulbs inside the pyramids and all this kind of stuff. And you know, people will even go down the range of hoodoo voodoo versions of energy as well. It doesn't matter. They really don't. It's insignificant. Because unless we're willing to put the ridiculousness aside and start actually, you know, trying to find the reality of it and using this reality to work in harmony with nature, we're just going to keep repeating the same thing over and over again. We're just going to keep blowing each other up. We're going to keep fighting over resources. Once again, I said this, and, you know, I don't care who thinks I'm ridiculous for saying it. There is no physical possible way that you are ever going to run out of any element on this planet that we're on. Planet, plane, dimension, or whatever. Until this world quits doing what it is doing, until the chemistry stops, until the mechanic, the heat, the pressure, the electricity, and all that kind of stuff, until this world ceases to do what it has been doing for however long you think we've been here, billions of years, 5 seconds, or 5,000 years, 6,000 years, whatever, however long you think we've been here. Basic science, basic physics, and basic observation tells me, and anybody with common sense, that there is no physical way possible that you can ever run out of any element that is on this planet unless you take it off this planet. Unless you somehow or another take all the water, take it off this planet, out of this dimension, this realm that we're in, you ain't never going to run out of water. It's constantly recycled into the system. It's utilized for terraforming the Earth, its own self. The Earth produces its own rivers. It produces its own canyons. It plants things. It picks seeds up with the wind or by animals or whatever. And animals are picking up and helping fertilize everything. Everything that is in existence that nature has already been doing is the perfect system that, whether you believe was a divine inspiration or just some sort of astronomically unlikely miracle of epic proportion, some accident. Well, however it got here, this Earth is amazing. This Earth has more than enough resources to provide for 10 times the population. And probably even more. And the day that mankind really does become overpopulated, nature will sort it out and put everything back into balance. So if there's ever too many people in this biosphere, then nature will take care of it. Nature will sort it out. Or the idiots of mankind will kill each other and sort it out. So nonetheless, you ain't going to be overpopulated. You're not going to run out of water. You're not going to run out of crude oil. So the oil companies are always going to be in business. There's always going to be coal. You're not going to run out of that. You can dig up the earth and dig up the earth and do all you want, and there, it doesn't matter. You move materials from this point to that point. You just added more materials over there. You didn't do anything with it. You burned firewood. Guess what? You made more products. You made more materials. You changed the chemistry. You changed the makeup of energy, and nature sorted it all back out and put it back where it was supposed to be. So you got a big hole over there, but you got a big mountain over there. If people could only realize what it is that I'm saying to them, and you know that the world's got everything taken care of, you'll stop killing each other off. You'll start pre-planning for future possible calamities. So if you know that there's a potential you're living in a flood zone, you either A, move, or you build your structures to withstand anything. Floods, earthquakes, hurricanes, tidal waves, you know, it'll float, it'll fly, it'll do whatever. So if you're living in your house and your smart grid detects there's a flash flood on the way, your house will float up, fly up, or whatever. We could actually see how far humanity could actually go. As long as we could decide to mutually put our weapons down and stop fighting each other and start working alongside each other. As long as we put our greedy people in check. Look, I ain't got no problem with you having a piece of cake. You just don't need to take everybody else's too, you know. That's it. The scales of justice. We can still live in luxury, and probably even better, You know, there's a story that says that in history that people lived anywhere from 500 to 900 years. That'd be kind of cool under the right circumstances. In today's day and age, the way things are, I don't know that I'd want to live no 500 or 900 years. People are crazy. But we have the capability to decide while we're standing at this crossroad in this time and space to actually do something incredibly profound. To actually decide that we want to see how far that we can take humanity. Now you got all these people out there that's got all kinds of crazy notions about what they believe to be their gods and their solutions to everything out there that still believe that they're going to want to kill everybody. If you don't believe the way they believe, they want to kill you. If you don't agree with what they agree in, they want to kill you. So we got our work cut out for us just trying to get anybody to agree on anything. But I estimate or surmise or whatever it is that the majority of the people ain't like those people. That the evil people on this world are vastly outnumbered by the good people of this world. I believe that if everybody out there who had a talent was willing to push their talent in with somebody else's talent, that we would get some things accomplished so fast that we could actually see how fast we could actually clean this earth up, that we could get things accomplished and do amazing things. There are things that you can only dream about, but if you can dream it, you can build it. If it works out in your mind mechanically, it's possible. If you can visualize it, you can do it. And that includes flying machines. You know, there's a lot of stories out there that it may or may not be myths about people that were building hovering platforms and such. Ain't no reason why that's not possible using science, because there are materials that will reject each other. There are materials that are different weights and geometric designs of how to build something that is super strong using something like a honeycomb geometry or whatever that makes the material stronger than it would have otherwise been in its natural state. So using science and physics, we can resolve everything. You know, a tube being stronger than a flat bar. There's so many different things that we've learned throughout history that if we could ever just get together and put all these pieces of the puzzle together, we can build the perfect machines and the perfect structures that nobody has to die during the tsunami. Nobody has to die during a flood. Nobody has to do without fresh water. Nobody has to do without food. We have methods by which we can raise fish and food at the same time. You know? And even in the waste of everything, whether it be cattle, you know, waste or, you know, the way that we manufacture stuff, there's byproducts that are manufactured, even chemistry, that all can be recycled. Every bit of it. Instead of throwing them in big old drums and throwing them down the barrel or in a barrel underneath the earth or whatever to sit there and be a highly concentrated toxic sludge, we could use what the knowledge that we have in order to either turn it back into something that is inert or even into a new type of energy source or even a new product that is perfectly safe for the human to be around and the environment. There's no reason why we have to waste anything. Nature wastes nothing. Doesn't matter what it is. Even radioactive material that they say will last for thousands of years, nature is continuously putting everything back in place. The big question is whether or not we have time to wait for nature to do the work for us. Or maybe should we take that wasted energy and utilize it to its fullest extent. when a hot radioactive rod is no longer efficient to actually boil water to the extent where it turns it into steam to run the pressure necessary to turn the turbines, doesn't mean that it is on, that it has no energy left that is extractable. From what I understand, according to what I've been told, it's only 2% of the energy in those radioactive rods even get used. The rest of it is classified as depleted. And so they go into cooling pools for 10 years. So it's in that cooling pool for 10 years. Because it has to be cooled down before you can store it safely in a container. And store it somewhere else, underground or whatever. But nonetheless, it's still releasing energy all that time. You can't obviously put these into tanks and in store them that way, because they'll continuously get hot, and then maybe water will leak in, and the water will boil into the extreme, and eventually potentially produce a hydrogen explosion that could hurt somebody. Or leak out into the environment, or whatever. Of course, if Galen Windsor was right in the video nuclear scare scam, then it's not even dangerous to begin with, but nonetheless, it shows you right underneath your nose, free energy has been hidden from the public for a long time. And still is today. So we have the capability, it's just the fact that whether or not we're ever going to get anybody to decide that the average Joe is capable of doing so much more if they're really willing to do the work. That's a big question. Because it might be easier just to let the power company do everything. Sure would be a whole lot less stressful than trying to give the world free energy just to keep paying the power company. Just let the system do what the system does. But I think that mankind, if mankind decides to, deserves at least a chance to see how far we can actually excel. How much farther we could actually go, the things that we could accomplish, being able to cure any disease or repair any broken bone, maybe even grow back teeth. Who knows? When society finally gets to that point, when we finally reach the maximum of what we could actually accomplish using our minds and our machinery and caring for one another, shows like the Mad Science Show would just be like a history lesson of how far man fell and how many times prior. We got a lot of potential. We're standing at a crossroads. And I can't do it by myself because I'm just one guy. Got a lot of good ideas. But that don't make me God by any sense of the definition. And if these ideas are just floating around in my head and they never put down on paper, or they're never actually put down in a video, or never even sent out over the airways such as Mad Science Show, and nobody ever takes that idea and runs with it, and it's basically like shouting at the walls, like shouting into a tunnel, and that echo, you hear yourself talk, but you don't never see anything happen out of it. Trying to rally the troops. I'm obviously not a very good cheerleader or motivational speaker. Because you would have thought that if somebody heard some common sense and they said, well, wait a second, this guy says that we can use duckweed for fuel and fertilizer and chicken feed. And the science bears it out. We can. Thomas mentioned about a plant called kudzu that you could actually grow like wildfire. All these different, even algaes, biodiesels and stuff out there. And even engineering to the extreme, the internal combustion engines or diesel engines or whatever that would be so incredibly efficient that they have absolutely no waste. There's no cruddy exhaust coming out. And even if there was any type of exhaust, that wouldn't be good. It'd be so insignificant that it wouldn't even affect nature in the least. So there's the solution there. Question is, are you ready to pick it up? You know, there's a lot of people got a lot of good ideas, but if there nobody's willing to take those ideas and run with them, then we're basically just repeating ourselves. Stay tuned, you're listening to Mad Science. I'm going to take a quick music break.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that? What was that ruckus?
Yes.
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, what was that ruckus? Scottish Sovereign said, it's not that you're a bad cheerleader, Shaz, just the folks with the pom-poms are too busy being caught up in falseness, ego, and material goods. Don't surprise me none, brother. So anyway, to sum it all up, I said, I know we can fix the world. And what I do not know is how to get everyone to help make it so. Here on the Mad Science Show, we talk about ideas and solutions and possibilities and where we could actually go and try to look for, you know, positive, helpful, solutions to just try to benefit everyone. That's what I believe in. I constantly say I believe in the dream. I do believe in the dream. I believe that if we ever used what potentials that we have available to us, if we learned how to use the materials that we have access to and all the resources available and all the knowledge and the gifts that we've been given, the skills, there ain't nothing that we couldn't accomplish. I honestly believe that if we, you know, really gave it a shot, we could boldly go where no man has ever gone before. We could stop repeating the the wars and the ridiculousness of the past, and we can actually get something done. And it'd be nice to see how far we could go. It'd be nice to see that we could actually, if we chose to do so, we could actually produce a heaven on earth. A utopia, so to speak. It's possible. Is it plausible? Well, not with today's mindset, I'm sure. Because most people have already been told that things aren't possible. And if you believe it ain't possible, chances are you're probably not even going to try to make it happen. But if you believe it is possible, and you at least make the attempt, you know, in your own neighborhoods, your own communities, if you at least try to use some of this ideas and solutions, and whatever works, you share that information with people. Whatever benefits your community, you share it. Share the ideas and how you did it. You look back through the entirety of history. Just about every single war was fought over something that nature provided, including the land that you're standing on. Somebody else wanted your land. Somebody else wanted your water. Somebody else wanted your food or whatever. Which in my mind is pure ridiculousness. Because it doesn't matter if you live in a desert. It doesn't matter if you live in, you know, snow or whatever. Every bit of science, and I'm not into scientism or Scientology or anything like that. When I say science, I'm talking about actually observing and using the scientific method that I was taught about way back when they actually used to really teach real science. So I believe that if we turn around and decided to use every single thing that we've learned and some common sense, there's no limit to what we could accomplish if we chose. You know, the Mad Science Show isn't about just some crazy here guy, like I said. We try to laugh, and sometimes, you know, we talk about serious things, sometimes even cry. Who knows? This Mad Science is about fighting against a system that has basically enslaved all of humanity mentally, physically, emotionally. Basically been the shackles that held us back to what we could have been so long ago. All for the greed. All for whatever purpose, for power. There's no king if there ain't no peasant, so to speak. And if you ain't got nobody to boss around, then you're not the boss. If we're all working together, then there is no boss. We can put our egos aside and actually bring our talents to bear on solutions. We can fix it all. Stop relying on governments to do things and start relying on each other. And those who'd want to steal from each other, well, we're going to have to lead by example to teach them a better way. So the road that we're on, if we ever decide to step on it, moving towards the future, it's going to be a hard road. Because there's always going to be those knuckleheads that want to try to do something bad. They're always going to want to try to kill somebody. And then you're always going to have those knuckleheads that's going to say, well, we should just kill the stupid people. We should just kill this person. We should just stop killing to begin with and start working together. Because it doesn't stop. The chain reaction of what you unleash, the energy, the bad mojo or karma or whatever that you unleash every time you kill one of your brothers or sisters, every time you do something terrible, we all pay the price. Every last one of us. And it's something that's been repeated over and over and over and over in history throughout wars and conflicts and violence. So it could very well be possible that I don't even belong on this planet or this plane or this dimension or realm or whatever, because it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to see what we have access to and to watch the state of affairs that we have to deal with. Why people are sitting there wasting such an amazing technology, you know, and even a platform like YouTube to sit out there and propagandize one another and lie and steal and beg and everything that you see out there. Is this the future of humanity? Seriously? Is this the best that we can do? And are those ignorant people that call humans the plague on the planet the best that we got? If you're one of those people out there that think that humans are the virus, that we're the disease on the planet, you have absolutely no respect for me whatsoever. And I don't say that to be mean, but you just elevated yourself above somebody else just because you thought yourself to be better. And that's exactly what those elitists of this world have been doing that has put so many men and women in harm's way throughout the entirety of our history. They think that depopulating the planet's an idea. They think that shoving us all in little cities is an idea. They think that controlling our lives and making our decisions is the idea. When in reality, until they get it, and we get it, and we all understand that we, as a human race, will never, ever succeed until we choose to work together. It's that simple. So if you're tired of all the craziness, and if you're tired of all the death and destruction and poisons, then you need to get out there and you need to learn and you need to teach and you need to show people a better way. Point out nature. This world that we live in is an amazing teacher if you're willing to pay attention. And we can never get past that point when we start deciding to work in harmony with nature. We're going to find our world is going to be a really nice place to hang out. You're not going to want to leave. Anyway, I put a lot of crazy stuff on the table. Some people believe that in the past that there were giants on the land. Some people believe there were titans. Some people believe the earth is flat. Some people believe it's round. Some people believe it's hollow. Concave, convex. Some people believe space exists, and some people believe it doesn't exist. The moon's a hologram, the moon's a spaceship, or whatever. What I believe that humanity has gone quite literally insane. And until we get our act together, until we stop allowing the elitist of the world, the corporations, and one another to doing what they're doing, until we stop allowing all this, we choose to live in a world such as the one we're in right now. We choose to live under the bondage of the power companies. Any of the energy industries, the medical industries, and all of the governments of the world, we the people chose. We choose it. We consent. Because with the information that we have, with all the technology and all the resources available, you build the dream team in your community, you'll make a difference. And for every one of those dream teams that pops up around the world, for every single dream team that lights that light, the darkness gets weaker. When you, my brothers and sisters out there, are ready to actually make this world a better place, I'm ready to join your dream team. I keep reaching out and saying, you know, hey, if there's any environmentalist people out there that want to talk, bring them here. Or, you know, if somebody wants to do some sort of seminar, or that, you know, just want somebody to talk and throw some common sense on the table to see where it goes. You know, I'd be willing to even travel if need be, but nobody really reaches out. I've done a few radio shows here and there for other networks. But maybe I'm not saying the right words. Anyway, I don't know how to inspire the world other than what I'm doing right now. So if you like this podcast, share it with somebody. Cut the pieces out that you do like. You know, every once in a while I stumble or stutter or get distracted, or I'm only human just like you. I got my pluses and I got my minuses, but I'm trying to make the world a better place, one positive pebble at a time, throw some ideas on the table in hopes that I do something good for people, in hopes that the world that I leave behind when I'm gone is better for my children and your children. That's what I say I believe in. I believe in the dream. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. If you like what you hear, share this podcast. Rebroadcast it or do something. Take care.
Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.